Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Wednesday evening with the Clear Mountain Monastery community. This evening, we are very happy to have Anam Tupten join us. Anam Tupten, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, I'll just read a quick bio, and then we'll just jump into questions. Well, Anam Tupten grew up in Tibet, and at an early age began to practice in the Nyingma tradition of Tibetan Buddhism. Among his many teachers, his most formative guides were Lama Tsordlo, Kenpo Chopel, and Lama Garwang. He is the founder and spiritual advisor of Dharmatop Foundation, teaching widely in the US and abroad. He is also the author of various articles and books in both the Tibetan and English language. His books in English include Choosing Compassion, No Self, No Problem, Into the Haunted Ground, and The Citadel of Awareness. Anam, I think most of the people who join our YouTube channel have some kind of Theravada inclination and experience with the Theravada teachings. It's a big question, but how would you explain Tibetan Buddhism and maybe even specifically the Nyingma tradition to someone who is more familiar with Southern Buddhism?
Thank you so much for your invitation. I'm really happy to be here and to share this time with you both. I would say that the heart of all Buddhist teachings and also traditions is very much same. That is said, the form of these Buddhist lineages and their practices are sometimes quite different from each other, and to the extent that sometimes people think that these traditions have some kind of different fundamental doctrine, which is actually not. We all share the same doctrine as well as the same objective, which is the nirvana or nibbana, the enlightenment. And we all take refuge in the three jewels. We all regard the Shakyamuni Buddha as our the founding father or the source of our teachings. But the Tibetan Buddhism is actually integration of many forms of Buddhist practices and which were once upon a time flourished in India, of course, the Vinaya system, but also Vajrayana or Tantric Buddhism. And therefore, Tibetan Buddhism is not really one particular lineage. It's very much infusion of many lineages and teachings, as I said, just few seconds ago, including the Vinaya training or the monastery training, Abhidharma and so forth, Madhyamaka, we call them the sutra teachings. And then Tibetan Buddhism also is very much built upon the Vajrayana or Tantric Buddhism. The Vajrayana or Tantric Buddhism is very much heart of the Tibetan Buddhism, and whereas the Vajrayana is not practiced by many other Buddhist traditions, I would say, and this kind of fusion of many lineages, practices of Buddhism is perhaps a unique characteristic of Tibetan Buddhism. Obviously, the Vajrayana is a huge part of Tibetan Buddhism, which is not practiced in other traditions such as Zen or Theravadan Buddhism. Of course, other than that, all the Buddhist traditions share the same fundamental doctrine. For example, like no self, I think you mentioned a title of my book, one of my book, No Self, No Problem. And no self, or Anatta in Pali in Tibetan Dharmic is really the center or the crux of a Buddhist doctrines. Either we're talking about Zen or Theravadan Buddhism or Vajrayana Buddhism. For example, I was in Thailand not very long time ago and gave some talks and meditation retreats and also paid a visit to Buddhist temples and also had an opportunity to interact with some Theravada Buddhist monks. And I didn't really feel I am at some kind of a different culture. I feel very much at a home because I just felt that this Buddhist vibe everywhere, I felt very much at a home.
Thank you, Anam Tupten. And you pointing to that common ground of Buddhist traditions and the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha, you know, and of how you felt at home even in Thailand, it resonates, I think, with one of the teachings that you're known for really raising up, Dzogchen, or non-dual awareness. And just as, you know, I've heard Dzogchen referred to as, I think you actually have referred to it as the heart of Buddhist practice, the kind of underlying practice that, you know, can underlie all these other variegated forms. You know, even as these different traditions have their root in Shakyamuni Buddha, how would you describe Dzogchen? What is that practice and why do you feel it's significant?
Thank you for asking that question. I hope I can answer your question. Dzogchen is a part of the Nyingma tradition. Usually in Tibet, there are many traditions beside the Nyingma lineage, but the Nyingma lineage is kind of almost like the custodian of the Dzogchen teachings, and that has to do with, of course, the history. The Dzogchen was practiced by many Buddhist yogis in ancient India, and later the Bamasambhava, we call him Guru Rinpoche, brought the Dzogchen teachings from India to Tibet during 8th century. And also another prominent Indian bandit, Bimala Mitra, also brought a whole body of Dzogchen teachings to Tibet. He was very much contemporary with Bamasambhava. They both came to Tibet at the request of a Tibetan king, Tsong Dipchen. That's the history, and the Nyingma lineage, which is my lineage, is actually the tradition of Bamasambhava, Ongur Rinpoche, and therefore in Nyingma, we regard that we are the kind of custodian of the Dzogchen lineage. And that is true. When you look at the Dzogchen lineage, all the great Dzogchen masters are actually from the Nyingma lineage. Let me name a few of them, like Longchenpa, Rinzhen Jingmen Langpa, and Changtong Dinjom Langpa. But the Dzogchen itself is very much non-conceptual dharma, and we call it Adi Yoga. In Tibetan Buddhism, we have this system that categorizes pretty much all the paths, all the spiritual paths within the Buddhist tradition into this categories. It's called the nine yanas. So it's a little bit very extensive, sometimes a little bit elaborated a system, but basically we categorize all the Buddhist paths and practice into this category known as the nine yana. And then the Dzogchen is considered Adi Yoga among the nine yanas or nine vehicles or nine paths. So Ati Yoga means the unsurpassable yoga or the unsurpassable path. And partly Dzogchen actually transcend everything. Dzogchen, in ultimate sense, transcend all the techniques, all the vehicles, all the spiritual paths, all the doctrines. It's simply point out as the ultimate truth or our own Buddha nature or the pristine nature of our own mind, which is, of course, the ultimate truth. And also, Dzogchen is very much a direct path. One of the premises of Dzogchen is that you can experience Nirvana, enlightenment, in this very human life. Not only that, even Dzogchen states that one can experience Nirvana or enlightenment even in the realm of here and now. And so there is even this famous saying in the Dzogchen tradition, which goes something like this. When you sit on the cushion or when you sit down, you could be very much a confused person or samsaric sentient being. By the time when you get up from your seat or meditating cushion, you could be fully awakened. You could end up being awakened person, like awakened individual. And so it kind of tells that the enlightenment can be sometimes very immediate experience. And so in essence, Dzogchen is all about pointing out the Buddha mind, our true nature, or the ultimate truth, or the unconditioned nature of our consciousness right now, without relying on too much effort or too complex theoretical analysis. And also, I think Dzogchen is very popular. It has been popular all along, but it's gotten quite popular, of course, in the East, but also in the West. Somehow people are really drawn towards the Dzogchen these days because it's partly it's the Nandu version of Tibetan Buddhism. And also it's very experiential. I think partly is very experiential. It's not lost in a lot of complex theories and endless techniques. It's very much experiential. So when people practice Dzogchen, I think many of them have this kind of firsthand experience of either you call it the Rigpa or the Nandu awareness or the Buddha mind or the no self. And that's why it's getting quite popular.
Thank you, Anam. And so would you mind telling us briefly how one practices Dzogchen? And, you know, I think there's a tension to navigate here where I think, you know, on one level, I don't think you or us would deny that there's a path to be walked and we could be better than we are. And where, I mean, I'm not enlightened. So how do you hold this idea, the idea that nirvana is available here and now? I admit it. I like how it sounds, but how do you hold that skillfully when the Buddha also spoke about a path to nirvana and it being quite a ways away for many of us, at least?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Let me answer your question. I think your question has two parts. So the way you start your Dzogchen is in the tradition to find really a wonderful or basically authentic Dzogchen master. We said that when there are three conditions coming together, then one can understand the Dzogchen. The three conditions for understanding Dzogchen is that to study with a lineage master or the guru or Dzogchen master who has all the instructions, like Dzogchen instructions, teachings, and then lineage with the blessings, or sometimes we actually say the teacher with the blessings, and then lineage with the full instructions. And then the last one is the student with the devotion. When those three conditions come together, then there is a possibility of understanding Dzogchen. And therefore, I think one of the most important steps in order to study or practice Dzogchen is to find an authentic Dzogchen master who has been practicing, who's a well-trained, and who also has unbroken lineage within the Dzogchen tradition. And then, of course, somebody can study with the great Dzogchen master, but if she or he don't have that devotion, or the devotion, or the complete love of the Dzogchen tradition, and then maybe the understanding of Dzogchen may not come into being easily. So these are the three conditions which are considered like the catalyst for understanding of the Dzogchen. And then you're right, there is a path, that is true. There, even in Dzogchen, there's a path too. One time I was in South Korea and met with a Zen monk, and he asked me to describe what Dzogchen path is, because he said that he is a Zen practitioner, and in his mind, basically, lots of these spiritual practices, at least in Buddhism, or even the whole path, can be divided into two, either a gradual awakening or an instantaneous awakening. When awakening occurs on the path, it can be instantaneous and it can be a gradual. So I would not actually say Dzogchen is either the path of an instantaneous awakening or path of gradual awakening. I would not put into any of those categories. I think this all depends on individual. For some people, Dzogchen could be a path of an instantaneous awakening, and that may not be true for somebody. But I'm sure people have an experience of extraordinary awakening when they practice Dzogchen, because you are really going towards the heart of matter, the ultimate truth. Even though you might have an extraordinary awakening while you're meditating, but then you also have your own karma or your samsara habits. So in that sense, I think having these awakening experiences, and also being on the path and going through the process of purifying our karma habits are not contradictory. So you can have many awakening while you're practicing Dzogchen, but also you can be on the path. I think it takes a long time to purify all our karmic samsaric habits, even though we may have sometimes very profound awakening.
Thank you. I recently heard about a framing of Dzogchen practice as taking or having instantaneous awakening and gradual familiarity. So yeah, having both. Or another framing is to take the goal as the path. Could you say more about that? It's a rather interesting, a different, you know, in Theravada, it's almost always framed as a gradual path leading to an instant awakening.
Yeah, right. In the Dzogchen, when you experience the Rigpa or the non-dual awareness, then your mind is pretty much enlightened in that very moment. And in that moment, what you're experiencing is just the perfect, the nirvanic state of consciousness, the Rigpa or non-dual awareness. And that awakening can occur at any given moment while you're meditating on the cushion. Most probably that will happen while you're meditating on the cushion, but it can happen at any given moment, right? It can happen too while you're maybe walking, or while you're cooking food, or while you're maybe listening to a song, or maybe reading some inspiring Dzogchen poems. It can happen. But then, even though that authentic, that experience could be authentic itself, could be what you're experiencing, could be totally nirvana or the Buddha mind, but that does not mean that all your samsara habits or the karmic habits are totally gone, and they're still there, and they're going to come out eventually. You know, they arise on the surface of our mind, so we kind of have to basically practice maintaining and that awareness, and trying to basically cultivate or to basically be in that state of consciousness, the non-dual awareness or the rigpa. And then as we continue to abide in that non-dual awareness throughout the day, and then all, I think our habits are going to be purified on their own. It's not like that we have to use a specific techniques to purify our karmic habits, which bind us to samsara or the world of confusion and suffering. But if we can maintain that non-dual awareness in everyday life, and that becomes very powerful karmic purification, to the extent that according to Dzogchen, if you are able to maintain the non-dual awareness, then everything's there. All dharmas are in that. You are missing actually nothing. Which reminds me of a very beautiful poem by Ngozi Chimelampa, who was one of the most revered Dzogchen master. And in one of his poems, by the way, his poems has lots of joy. I think he talked about that he fell in love with Dzogchen. It's like a love poem, except love poem towards Dzogchen. So yeah, I think we need lots of Dharma love poem, love poem towards Nirvana, love poem towards Dzogchen, love poem towards no self, love poem towards emptiness. So this one is kind of love poem towards Dzogchen. Basically, he said he doesn't really have lots of time. He said he doesn't have like lots of time. He doesn't have like 3 eons to be on path and to get somewhere. And he also said that this present mind, this very mind, is already living Buddha. And he said all the three precepts, means the precepts of Vinaya, the precept of Bodhisattva, the precept of Tantrika, which is Vajrayana practitioner. Those three precepts are completed perfectly within the Rigpa pure awareness. He said, therefore, I fell in love with the Dzogchen. So the idea that if you are able to maintain the awareness of Rigpa, the non-awareness, then that is like the 84,000 dharmas, even though maybe in that moment, maybe, you know, we are not doing any kind of other extra dharma practices, but just being in non-dual awareness has the power to purify all our habits, all our karmic habits or samsaric tendencies. And also Dzogchen teaches that the very original and the pure nature of our being, our mind or consciousness already enlightened, is the unconditioned already. For example, if I quote Buddha from one of the Pali Sutras, I really love this phrase, and I hope I'm quoting it correctly. And please don't hesitate to correct me if I'm misquoting this a line from a Pali Sutra. By the way, I have all the Pali canons at my library. They are very cherished. I try to read them, and they are just such a source of inspiration. I think Buddha said that there is a going away from that is made become conditioned that to the that is unconditioned, unmade, and become something like that. I don't really remember the Buddha's words correctly. So spiritual path is journey in Buddhism, and a journey from samsara to the nirvana, journey from conditioned to the unconditioned. In some sense, we could say that the rigpa or the non-awareness is already the unconditioned. So when you are in it, you are actually experiencing the realm of unconditioned. And then, of course, at same time, we are also sentient beings, as a Buddhist words, sentient beings. So we have all the samsara habits, and of course, they will continue, but they will be purified again by power of abiding in the rigpa, because that is already the unconditioned or the nirvana. And so, yeah, in that sense, there is a path too. I think practicing the rigpa and dzogchen is the path. Sometimes, you know, we have to be even diligent to practice dzogchen too. It's not like that I can just memorize all these beautiful dzogchen words and not to practice any meditation and expecting that somehow enlightenment knock on my door and all my samsara habits will go. I will be fooling myself. I think still we have to be very much diligent to practice dzogchen. Actually, even though dzogchen itself is regarded as a path without a path, method without a method, or the methodless method, or path of effortlessness, at the same time, and there is a lot of actually kind of effort almost. I don't know, maybe effort, but there's a lot of emphasis on the practice. So much that the dzogchen teachers always said that our practice to remain in the non-awareness all the time as much as possible. So in some sense, it sounds really easy, but on the other hand, we are really invited to be fully present all the time throughout the day. And sometimes we talk about the way of maintaining the awareness, non-awareness, rigpa and dzogchen is like the flow of the stream of flow of the river, which runs all the time, day and night, 24 hours a day. And the idea is that our goal is to remain in awareness and non-awareness all the time, while you are walking, while you are eating, while you are lying down, while you are meditating, while you are having a conversation. So it's not like some kind of theory that I memorize and then expecting that enlightenment would knock on my door. So it involves in some ways a great deal of mindfulness and commitment. So yeah, I think some people think, oh, it's really easy. You know, they come across these beautiful lines, you know, path of effortlessness. All I need is just read some dzogchen books. And then, you know, I don't have to meditate. I don't have to do anything. It doesn't really work that way. I ran into some people, not these days, but old days, thinking that all they need is to read some good dzogchen books and then just entertain this really wonderful, very lofty ideas, expecting that the nirvana or enlightenment knock on door. So when you look at the history of life story of dzogchen masters, they were very serious meditators. I would say some of the serious, sincere meditators in Tibetan Buddhism are the Dzogchen Yogis, and some of them actually just went away from the whole world and spent a whole lot of time in a cave or in even a tent in a very high altitude, which could be 14,000 feet from sea level, and ate very simple food, just samba, barley flour, and maybe really bad butter. And that's all we had in Tibet and all that. And all they did from morning to the evening, they just practiced the Dzogchen. So it's not like that we don't have to practice. That said, it is true that when we really know how to drop into the Rigpa pure awareness, that's where that we are actually returning to the unconditioned, because unconditioned or nirvana is ultimately the original state of our being, our consciousness. And therefore, some of these Tibetan Buddhist masters tend to say that nirvana is not something to be attained. Nirvana is actually a natural, the primordial ground of our being, or our consciousness, that is already perfect, pure all along. And we call it sometimes the Dzogchen, the original purity. So nirvana is just another name. They said nirvana is just another name for the removal of the veils. And that obscures our true nature, which is already enlightened. So nirvana is not something to be attained. Nirvana is just a word that describes a state of your being that is unveiled by all this, what we call incidental obscurations, the ego, you know, the five poisons or the three poisons, the kleshas, and these are considered the incidental veils, which are not really the true nature of our being. And they're just incidental obscuration, so they can be purified.
Thank you. I think we will go to questions in a moment. I just want to ask one more question. So there's oftentimes talking about a pointing out instruction, and you talk about the importance of having a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's possible to get a pointing out instruction, or to have the insight that the pointing out instruction is pointing to, without actually meeting a teacher, but say through listening to a podcast or reading a book by an enlightened master that's pointing at this state? I'm currently reading Carefree Dignity by Togni Rinpoche, and have gotten a lot of benefit from Lot Kelly. And that's how I first learned about you, your conversation with Lot Kelly. And Is it possible to have this insight just from listening without actually seeing and meeting a teacher in person?
Oh yeah, that is possible. And I'm glad that you brought this very good question. You know, sometimes in Buddhism, we pray that we will hear Dharma teaching from birds and from sky. You know, those very amazing poetic Buddhist aspirations. And also there is a theory in Tibetan Buddhism that sometimes you're able to receive teachings from natural world. And of course that could be metaphorical. I think you can actually have a Dzogchen experience or Nando experience or the Rigpa, obviously from of course, listening to maybe recorded teachings, or from reading Dzogchen books, or maybe just from a meditation. We should not rule out of such possibilities. Even when you look back at the Dzogchen history, and there were these extraordinary Dzogchen masters who actually had a waking experience through different catalysts. And that is said, I think, it's always good, I think. It's really good to study with a Dzogchen master who is an authentic lineage holder. It would be kind of safe path. Otherwise, you know, sometimes we may have all these experiences. Maybe somebody could be just reading Dzogchen books and thinking that she or he is having the Rigpa, but maybe something else, she or he is experiencing something else other than the Rigpa. And also in the Dzogchen tradition, sometimes the teachers talk about Shenjit. Shenjit means distinction. And this is a quite a vital part of the Dzogchen practice. And it is some kind of almost contemplation itself, where basically make sure the difference between Rigpa versus pseudo Rigpa, because there are some experiences that seems to be very similar to the non-dual awareness, but maybe they're not non-dual experiences, they're just some kind of altered state of mind. And sometimes even the Dzogchen teachers make sure that I'm not somehow falling into those traps where maybe I have had some kind of really good experiences. Maybe, who knows, maybe I'm on the altered state of mind from meditation, and then my ego says, my spiritual ego says, oh, this is a Rigpa, and now you're there. And then whereas maybe I'm just having some kind of altered state of mind.
on that point.
Too. So starting with teacher, yeah.
On that point, I mean, this is because, I mean, this is a fascinating kind of convergence of language and tradition. Because, yeah, for, you know, hearing the non-dual teachings from a Theravada perspective, that would be my fear, is that, you know, the state that someone was taking as Rigpa Nirvana would not be. And so trying to kind of map these onto a Theravada conception, which I don't know how much it can be done, but I'm curious. You know, one idea is that when someone's touching this Rigpa, it's stream entry. You know, it's like a stream enterer touches Nirvana, but there are still defilements, so they get pulled back. Right. And then they have to keep practicing. The one caveat there is that in the Theravada, that's considered extremely rare. It's very rare when to meet a stream enterer. The other way I'm trying to overlay it is to consider that the way Nirvana is being used here is a rhetorical device, or sort of a rhetorical device, to point to that moment of letting go into a state of more refined awareness. Right. And I suppose I could really understand that, but I'm wary also of the danger of conflating such a state of, say, samadhi or letting go with unshakable liberation.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And so is that a real tension that you navigate, or how would you put my mind to rest in this intention?
Yeah, this is a really good question too. I personally don't want to rule out any kind of possibilities. You know, I even don't want to rule out the possibility of an instantaneous awakening, and I don't want to rule out this possibility based on my own logic, because you know, when I look into my own mind, I can really see that I can experience instantaneous awakening, but that does not mean there's no possibility. For example, you know, there are lots of things I cannot do, but I should not rule out of the possibility. I can climb peak of Mount Everest in this lifetime. You know, I never tried it, but I cannot really imagine myself climbing the Mount Everest. And also, you know, I just watched the Olympic Games recently. Some of the athletes are so amazing. I don't know whether you watched the Olympics or not, but I watched some of them. I was just amazed by the just unbelievable prowess of the human human physical strength, dynamism. But there's no way I can do some of them. I can perhaps practice some of this sport the rest of my life, but I won't be able to do any of them, you know. And so, but that does not mean if my body cannot do some extraordinary performance, nobody can do that. That would be actually kind of very tricky conclusion too. So I think sometimes we tend to roll out possibilities by using our own mind capacity as a logic. So therefore, I think there's a possibility of even instantaneous awakening through Dzogchen practice. So I rule out a possibility that somebody just ran into great Dzogchen master like Jingmyo Nangpa, Denjom Nangpa, who are not alive. I wish they are alive. And had instantaneous experiences, and just jump just to the highest state. In the Dzogchen, we have a 16 bimis, 16 ground of awakening. And of course, there are different systems. For example, you have a five paths in Buddhism, which you mentioned, that five paths, and also different practitioners, categories of different practitioners, like, for example, Jinjuk Shiron Shimon, Dap Chomba, like that, like stem entering, and all the way to Arhat. So in the Dzogchen, there's a possibility that one can actually literally just cross all these paths in a single moment and become fully enlightened. I do not want to rule out of such possibility, but I can expect that. I can show that myself. I think myself is very, I regard myself as extremely slow practitioner on gradual awakening. Maybe I would have some awakening many, many lifetimes from now on, you know. But I do not want to roll out of any possibility because my limited capacity.
So that's really helpful, Anand. Yes. So it sounds like you are kind of allowing for a distinction between those moments of touching into something deeper and what you're calling ultimate, the top of Everest.
Yeah.
There is a difference between those, because that's where I get hung up as, you know, a Pali kind of adherent, is, you know, the idea that there might not be any distinction between this place that people touch and that the top of Everest. So it sounds like you're saying that there is a distinction between those two places. But even though it is possible for someone to every now and again take a big trampoline jump right to the top of Everest, which happens all the time in the suttas when someone hears the Buddha's words.
Yeah, I think anything's possible. I think those systems, not only sutras, but also you have systems in the sutra and tantras, with tantras, like, for example, five paths, and for example, 16 ground and 13 grounds of awakening of bhimis. So you have all these systems in both Buddhist tantras and Buddhist sutras, and these are very good. They're like a map. They're like almost like a map that illuminate the general process of individuals awakening. So I feel they're very much sort of a generalization of the process of awakening that the people go through. But that is said, I think also have to leave room for very extraordinary possibilities that can happen on the path, such as the instantaneous awakening where somebody have a awakening experience and become fully awakened forever. So I think we have to leave room for all this unique and exceptional situations. Otherwise, you know, like, for example, like imagine you have a map and you are going somewhere, and then maybe the person who invited lives in the woods where there are no really road, you have to walk, but you will not find that person's address either in GPS or in a paper map, because it's not somehow included in that map. So I think some of the systems, you know, like the five paths or the 10 ground of being awakening, the 10 bhimis Mahayana Buddhism or the 13 bhimis Vajrayana, these are maps, but they are also, I think, somehow experiences, spiritual experiences, such as individual spontaneous awakening, which are not included in that map. Mm-hmm. So we kind of have to be always open-minded.
And thank you. I want to ask one more question before we go over to Zoom. But so one way which I'm able to at least reconcile in my mind to some degree the teachings on Dzogchen and this this clear seeing is with the Pali concept of vipassana, which literally means clear seeing.
Yeah,
which sees, you know, the truth of not self, impermanence, and dukkha, and that seeing the truth of not self, that yeah, it does seem like it's in line with the insight into Rigpa, the Dzogchen insight. And but one can practice vipassana at any time, just as it said that one can practice Dzogchen at any time. But how does one do it? This is a somewhat of a practical question, when it just seems like the mind is very cloudy. It seems like there's a lot of confusion, there's a lot of dullness. Yeah. I mean, one reads some books on Dzogchen, it said that, yeah, the mind is always luminous and you don't need to make an effort. But it seems like when the mind is just clouded in ignorance and confusion and dullness, not making an effort doesn't really work. So how does one work with dullness in terms of turning to Rigpa or insight?
That's really a good question too. All questions are good. Well, in the Dzogchen meditation, we have also, of course, what we call, for example, like this meditation obstacles, like often not just in Dzogchen, but in Tibetan Buddhism, we talk about all these different obstacles, which are also mentioned by the traditions and some of the categories of these meditation obstacles are very much similar the way we teach in Tibetan Buddhism and the way also they teach in Theravadan Buddhism. But in Tibetan Buddhism, we tend to categorize all the meditation obstacles. There are quite a few of them into two, the dullness and then agitation. Dullness is called mukh and jhang, and then gut is like agitation, means like one's mind becomes like too active and just lots of thoughts and end up being totally caught up in the thoughts. And then another obstacle is like the dullness. But in Dzogchen, in some sense, we are supposed to welcome all of them, including dullness, and not trying to get rid of that. As long as we're able to somehow welcome that experience while we are in Nandu awareness or Rigpa. But then if we feel that dullness is really overwhelming to the extent that we feel we are kind of losing our grounding in the non-awareness. And then there are some methods that we use, for example, such as exclaiming certain syllables like pat. You can exclaim that loud as much you can, or you can sometimes even chant singing Dzogchen Dohas, songs of Dzogchen, or do more Dvogchen practice that can awaken your heart. Like, for example, Dzogchen Goryoka. For example, I heard that the Zapata Rinpoche, one of the great Dzogchen masters, Nyingma Lineage, used to do a meditation in this forest called Aryanak in eastern Tibet. And sometimes he walked around in the forest and he would just say haha, almost he will laugh and people will hear that he's like laughing like haha. I think what he's doing is that he's using this kind of method to be alert and to shock his mind so he can lose all his concepts, ideas, and just completely be in the Rigpa, the pure awareness, and feel that he's almost like in that state of pure, present, naked Rigpa awareness. There are methods that we use usually to make sure that we're not completely governed by the dullness. But usually we try to welcome even dullness within the Rigpa, within the non-dual awareness, and not to see dullness as a bad or something we have to reject, or thinking that we should be experiencing another state of mind. So there is a, in that sense, fine line between not trying to exclude dullness, but also same time, not let it just take over your mind, and then it's no longer Rigpa, and then we are kind of meditating while we are totally in the state of moha, right? Ignorance. So we are not in Rigpa, we're in the ignorance. We are not in Rigpa, we're in the moha. Moha is Sanskrit word for ignorance. And then think, oh, I meditated on the Rigpa last 45 minutes, but maybe I was just dozing off and totally sleepy. I was maybe meditating within the moha or ignorance. Yeah, that's a fine line that people have to become aware of.
Thank you so much, Anam Tupten.
And, oh, you're welcome.
You know, it's really helpful to just hear these concepts talked about more, because I think once we push back past some of the language, there is convergence, and I mean, it's all practice in that sense. So I really appreciate your patience with us kind of asking about fleshing these out more, and it's just really appreciated. So
Man, thank you for your patience. I hope I was able to answer your questions. I hope I gave the right answers. I hope so. And to me, this is a, you know, very much fun for me. Thank you for your invitation.
Well, we'll move on over to Zoom now, and Anam Tupten will be joining us there. I just want to thank Steve Wilhelm for connecting Anam Tupten with us. And for those who want to move over to Zoom for a more intimate discussion, the link is in the chat and also on clearmountainmonastery.org's website under the Wednesday live stream listing. And we'll see you over there in a minute.
Thank you.